Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. They say that there's only three types of people in the world. Those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. I'm talking mothers of special needs and very young children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases, and a host of others. I can go on and on. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. Hey, welcome to the show. I'm Dave Nassani, your caregiver expert. And this is from Los Angeles, the big LA. Welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. As I said, I'm Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous Radio Star Worldwide Network. Yes, folks, I am the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And it is a difficult journey. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. And we have an exciting show planned for you today. Brad and Mary, they are both 70 years old, and they're still caregiving, if you can believe that. So we're going to find out, you know, all the things that they did to prepare for this and how they still had surprises. Now, we also have our lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg from the Caregiver Space. And
hi.
We'll be interviewing. Hi, Brad and Mary. So stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. If you're new to the show, and we have many new listeners every week, I am your host, Dave Nassani. This show is the caregivers of every single kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring and selfless and sacrificial, all good things, but they have this bad thing that they are very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Because, you know, like the airlines tells us, in the event of an emergency, put your oxygen mask on first before you help your loved one with their mask. And the airlines know that because of that, most people will burn out, black out, call it whatever you want, because they're not putting their needs above the needs of their loved one. And caregivers are exactly the same way. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this other thing called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, there's only one way out of the grief process. You got to go through it. No other way. Can't go around it, under it, over it. Got to go through it. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you're kind of stuck. I want to thank my last week's guest, Fitz. And he was talking about the benefits and the magical things that music can bring into a caregiver's life and a loved one's life as well. Now, just a reminder, you can hear that interview and all our interviews, including the one we're doing now on our podcast at thecaregiverscaregiver.com. That's caregivers with an S, caregiver without an S.com. And while you're there, take our short quiz to see if you're a candidate for burnout. And just for doing that, I'm going to send you my first book absolutely free, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardship. What a deal. All right, enough of that. Brad and Mary, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for agreeing to this interview, despite all of our technical difficulties. I really appreciate it. Why don't you take a minute or two?
Thank you for the invitation.
Hey, no problem. My pleasure, and Adrian's pleasure as well. Why don't you take a minute or two and introduce yourself? Just who is Brad and Mary, and what is your mission in life now?
Well, our mission in life is to go back to work in the event that my mother outlives her long-term care insurance policy, which is for 3 years. And it very likely could happen. And we need to put and have some extra money for her, which we didn't plan on doing at 70 years old. But it's what's happening, and it's what we're doing right now.
Really? No kidding. You didn't plan for this, huh?
Well, we planned in terms of I sold her long-term care policy back in 1992, and mm-hmm. I sold her what she could afford. And,
you mean you're an insurance
and
agent?
She paid, yes. Okay. Yes, Brad and I both have an insurance license.
That's smart.
So, thank you. So, you know, she paid the premium, and we thought, well, okay, she's paid all the premiums, and now we institute the claim and put her in a facility, and that's what we did. And that was only 6 months ago that we did that. And it has, I call it a living nightmare.
It's actually been,
really?
She's lost track of time. It's been 9 months now.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Time flies when you're having fun. Ain't that right, Adrian?
Yeah, doesn't it? Yeah.
And besides long-term care insurance, mom's prior two husbands, both were World War II vets, and so she was eligible for an aid and attendant benefit from the VA, mm-hmm. Which just that alone was quite a process, because we had went to a local meeting of some guy. Turns out he was an insurance agent. He'd get you the aid and attendant benefit, and I've never been pushed so hard in my life. I've done all of it. This guy, and he wanted money. We were going to pay him to get this benefit, and then until he showed me a form that said, you know, Department of Veterans Affairs, and I went, wait a minute, that looks like stuff I've done because I'm a disabled vet. I went to my DAV, Disabled American Veteran Service Officer, and they found that the stuff he was doing was all wrong, number one. And number two, got them. They helped us, so we did get the benefit. But people will prey on you when you are first entering this world of senior care, assistive care, whatever you all the things you want to call it. And so, you know, we are actually tempted when we get done to write one of those an itty bitty little book on dealing with
aging parents.
Aging parents. So
an itty bitty book.
there's something that there's a company that does. They're called itty bitty books. They're small books. But yes. That would have been so helpful for us. There, you know, we thought, you know, once we had that, then we got the aid and attendant. She had her Social Security. We've gone through four moves in 9 months. We think, we pray to God, we think she's in a good place now. She was in a place that we thought was good, and of course they abused her and beat her up.
Was awful.
And in other places that we thought were nice, the outside looked great and everything, and it wasn't. So there's a whole process in finding, asking questions that we never seem to do. And that's what we want to help people with, is what questions to ask, how to go through it, and have just a little bit, an itty bitty little book with a checklist in it that they can go through.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you consider you guys blessed and lucky, because it could be a lot worse than it actually is. And Adrian can tell you this, because you're both 70 years old. And number one, it sounds like you're in decent health. Yes.
Yes, we are.
We are in very good health.
Good.
So you're in such good health that you're caregiving your mother, Mary, which you know, a lot of people your age do not have the energy or the resources or anything to do that. So you're in a good position, believe it or not. I know it's not perfect, but it could always be worse. Is that right, Adrian?
That's
You're one of the lucky ones, as we say. So consider yourself blessed. Now, what kind of facility is she in? Is it a nursing home, assisted living, independent living? What is it?
It's board and care. So there are six other, she, including her, there are six residents there. The first facility was huge. We had her in Agora Hills, and it was like over 200 people. And so here she gets just better care because they're not so overloaded with, you know, the seniors that they take care of.
Sure.
So they can give her a little bit more attention and watch her because at the first facility, we don't know how, but she fell and ended up fracturing three ribs and three vertebrae. And for for a 92-year-old, that's precisely what she said. Yes, it did. And it hurt for a long time and not a lot you can do.
And the thing that was upsetting to us was when that happens, well, it's another aspect of that kind of care. They do not provide medical care. Unless you are in a skilled nursing facility that has RNs, and if you're in a assisted living facility, large or a board and care, when somebody gets hurt or something happens, they're supposed to call 911. When mom was hurt, she didn't. They called us, said, "Oh, good, we're on our way." They said, "Oh, she's fine." Of course, we got out there and found out she wasn't.
So
it was
fine.
Over the 4th of July weekend. We had to wait until Monday to call the doctor and get her in. They immediately sent her to the hospital and so on. So then she went into a rehab facility, which is a little different. You know, she was sharing a room, which is okay. But it's not the same as having your own room. And, again, we love people, and we're people of faith and very trusting. I'm this crazy Swede who trusts everybody.
What we've learned
through this is not to trust. Don't trust anybody. There's money involved in this care. Don't trust anybody. Ask questions. Look around. Come back multiple times. That was the one area where we felt most betrayed so often. And finally, on the last day, we actually have a very good friend from church who is a pastor at the Motion Picture Home and now retired. And he helped us go through a process of somebody through church, and then they had deacons, and then they had somebody call us, and we were able to find what we think is a great facility. It's absolutely beautiful. It used to be a two-bedroom, one-bath home. It's in Tarzana. But it was on a big lot, and then they built it out really nice. So it's now, I don't know, it's six bedrooms and multiple baths, and all very, very nice. So far she's done and responded very well. But
would you agree, a blanket statement, that small facilities are generally better than larger ones, or is that not fair to say?
Yes, because for mom, she wasn't as independent as she could have been. So for her, the board and care is much smaller. So, you know, it just was better for her. And, you know, she's been diagnosed with dementia on the, you know, and Alzheimer's. So she forgets her short-term memory. So sometimes they, you know, they gently remind her and redirect her, you know, to where she needs to be. And this facility, which no one else did, has a video camera in her room, and they are constantly watching her. Seven days a week, 24 hours a day. And then another thing that I was quite pleased with is they hire a special person to work that graveyard shift, you know, from midnight to 7 a.m. And, you know, so if she gets up, which is what she did a lot, get up in the middle of the night. And so there's somebody there, as I say, you know, to redirect her back to her room, and or if she wanted something to eat, fix it for her. So I was quite pleased with that.
And even before you start the process, you have to check who your doctor is. She had the same doctor for 30-plus years.
Uh-huh.
She's in a Medicare Advantage program. But when we tried to get a geriatric doctor specializing to adjust medications and other things, it took us...
Well, they refused. The doctor would not do it because it was financial for him. He gets a certain fee from Blue Shield, which is the he didn't want to lose that, so they refused.
They said, well, we're having trouble. We can't get someone and this and that. Well, we were calling them on the other side, and they said, sure, we can. If we need one, we just
contract.
If we don't have one, we'll go find one and contract with them, and then you're covered, and that your doctor won't lose out anything. They refused to believe that, and we eventually switched within Blue Shield. We switched the medical group. We found a wonderful doctor who is also a geriatric specialist. And once we got her medications and everything adjusted, all of it, she's better than she's looked in months and months and months. So,
wow, that's really, really good.
There were we went through so many sleepless nights, I can't tell you. Worrying about every phone call, notwithstanding the fact that we were there 5 to 6 times a week.
It's a very
before you
deep
put her in a facility.
Curve.
I'm sorry for interrupting. Before you put her in a facility, was she staying at your home?
Yes, she lived with us. We specifically
for how long?
Moved out 15 years. She was here for 15 years,
mm-hmm.
And the last 2 years of that were awful. I can't explain it any other way because, and she needed to, and it wasn't until, unfortunately, a year ago, last month, I, long story short, crushed my elbow, and I had to send her to my brother's because Brad could barely take care of me. So, I mean, he had his hands full, and I couldn't do anything. So then we realized what we needed to do, so we did it.
And when literally as I'm taking her to the hospital, she's calling her brother to say, come and pick up mom. There's nothing I can do. There was a lot of trauma behind that. I didn't believe that she was hurt. We took care of that. And so your life is totally disrupted and you need to deal with it. And again, our itty bitty little book is going to
have a lot of information.
Have a lot of information to help.
I think the itty bitty book might be too itty bitty for it.
Right.
You might need a big book.
That's interesting. And who knows? Maybe we'll have a volume 2 and 3 for that. But we just want people to have something so that they can start to prepare. Not preparing as you're packing the little overnight bag to take mom to someplace or dad to someplace, and examine the reasons why, what kind of care, how often you're going to be available. We were at one facility that I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but a lot of East Coast people like to send mom or dad out there. That way they don't have to visit them. They don't care what the cost is. They just don't want mom or dad underfoot.
Mm.
Sure. What does it cost to have her there? Just curious.
Well, we started out at around $3,300 a month.
$3,300. Okay, that's about
average. We're now at $4,500.
Oh, and why did it go up?
Mm-hmm.
Well, as we kept moving from place to place.
You just got a better facility.
And The better the facility, the more cost it was.
Sure.
And although we swore to each other we wouldn't make another snap decision about if we walk into this place and we love it, you know, it's like a home, and spend 24 hours and we have to think about this. But when we met this woman who runs the facility, who was, I shouldn't say she's not now, but she was a registered nurse, and her daughter runs the facility, and she's also a registered nurse. We told her that we wanted it before we left that day. And, I said to Brad, oh, gosh, I hope we didn't make the wrong decision. But it turns out that we didn't. They always say the third time's a charm. Well, for us, it was. So, thank goodness.
She is the end unit.
We need to take a break. Let me just hold that thought right there. We'll be back in a couple of minutes, and then I want to talk about the transition because, it's so hard when you have a loved one in your home to understand when you reach that magic moment that they can't stay any longer, that it's in their best interest to move to a facility. And it's so hard because so many people, we're forced to promise that I'll never put you in a nursing home. I'll take care of you till I die, basically. And a lot of people, because of guilt or decisions they made, just can't seem to make that move. And probably with you guys, maybe she stayed in your home too long, huh?
Yes.
It was right up. Yes, it was that close.
All right. We'll talk about that when we get back. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive godly attitude, and I look forward to that day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. And I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You'll be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchase it on the author's website, David Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your copy. Just go to onearmoneleg100words.com. That's onearmoneleg100words.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to take our short quiz to help you assess if you are a candidate for burnout. And if so, where you are in the burnout process. And just for doing that, Dave will send you a special gift. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast on his website. Go to caregiverscaregiver.com. That's caregiverscaregiver.com. And now, let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And we're back with Brad and Mary and my co-host, Adrian Gruberg. So let's talk about transition. When did you know that it was time to transfer your mother to a facility, and how long did it take you to actually do it?
Well, as I said, she lived with us for 15 years, and 2 years ago was when we should have done it. But it was not an easy decision for me to make or for me to admit that there was, something wrong with her in terms of her dementia.
let's go a little deeper into that, because a lot of times there's a form of denial going on that keeps people from doing. Same thing when someone's driving, and they have Alzheimer's and taking the keys away. I mean, it's all the same thing. Or moving them out of a real home into a independent living, and moving them from independent living to assisted living, and then again from assisted to a nursing home. It's just so tough. Maybe you can talk about what a lot of people who are listening are going through right now, and they know that this loved one needs to be moved, but they just can't bring themselves to do it. Maybe you can help them out.
Well, I know that it's an extremely hard decision. As I said, you know, 2 years ago, we should have done it. But I was so ridden with guilt that
guilt.
I wouldn't listen to Brad.
The G word.
You know, when he, right, yes, big time. And she also, you know, pushes those buttons quite well. You'd think at my age I'd learn how to deal with that, but I haven't learned how to deal with it. And even now when we go, she still lays that guilt on me. And,
really?
You know, she always asks me when she can come home and, you know, is she better? And it's a very difficult thing. And then if Brad and I want to do something fun or we want to go out to dinner or, you know, it's like I have to, you know, chip away at that layer of guilt, you know, before I say yes to him. Okay, you know, let's go because it, you know, we prepared for it. But and when we did all this back in 1992 was when my stepfather was still alive, and he was very much in favor of, you know, her doing this because he had been hurt severely and was confined to a wheelchair, so I couldn't sell him long-term care. But he was very much in favor of my mom doing this so that there would be some place, but that's not anything that she remembers currently now, because when I say to her, but Mom, we prepared for this, you know, and she just...
Along she was saying that, well, let me go someplace. I can be around people my own age and so on. Because when she was here, she was not getting as much stimulation, but we thought we were trying. But it came to the point where it was very difficult for us to leave the house for more than 30 or 45 minutes, maybe do some shopping, that she would call, when are you coming back, this, that, or whatever. So the idea of us taking and going away for a day or two was just not even thought of.
So not only was it bad for you guys as caregivers, not being able to get any respite, but it really wasn't the best place for her as well. So really there's a little selfishness going on, because it's easier to just, you know, not face the confrontation. And this is what goes on in people's heads. At least I think it is. Wouldn't you agree, Adrian, that it's not only the guilt, but it's just, you know, just so many things that they're battling with in making this decision.
Definitely. You know, you've made the promise, I will never put you in a nursing home. And it's not 1 year or 2 years or 3 years, which might make some people crazy, but it's 15 years. I mean, you've watched someone decline, and they've taken your life over, really, because you can't do anything because they're around, and yet you deserve a life. Thank you.
And a great tip that we learned from several institutions is when you're gone, they get along with everybody. Everybody's their age, you know. They get along and do well until you're there.
Until they walk in the door.
Kids are like that too in preschool.
And that's part of that process of going from children to adult, and then as you age, you revert back to some of that childish behavior. Well, you know, it's hard to personally take that in, and. Mm-hmm. So we found out after several times that was the case, that we saw her one time doing well because she was like way down a long hall and all that. And once she got close enough to recognize us, I could see the body language change. And then it was, it's terrible here. I hate it. And I went like this and that. So
yeah, they beat me twice a day.
Sure.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
And it's, so you have to deal with that. I mean, it's hard not to say, Mom, you're crazy, you know. And
That is what my brother said to her. He said, after I hurt my arm last year, he said, Mom, he said, you're losing your mind. And she was beside herself. So she picked up the phone and she called.
A little too much truth, huh?
Yes, yeah, that's my brother. And she said to Brad, why didn't you tell me? And it's like, how do you tell her? It's like when she says to me now, when can I come home? You know, it's hard for me to say, Mom, never. You know, and she'll
so
say,
we don't say it. We just say, you know, when you get better.
Yeah, and
which is,
they
which is,
she does recognize both of you, yes?
Yes,
oh,
she
yeah,
does.
She does. So we're,
all
we're,
of the time?
We're still good there.
Yes.
Good.
Yes, she does.
That's something.
Yes.
Yeah, we're there's...
Are you prepared for that day when she's not?
Yes, because I lost my father some long, long time ago. And took me a long time, but I did manage to get over that. So, and my stepfather, who I loved him too. He was the greatest guy, and, you know, it was perfect for Mom. So it won't, I'm not saying that it'll be easy, but, you know, she can't live forever. No matter how much
right.
nutrition, which we do have her on a lot of our nutrition.
But,
sometimes
it seems like they do live forever.
Right, yes, that is true. And then I beat myself up because I say, don't say that. That's not the right thing. She's your mother. And, you know, so, and they wanted
to. You got to keep your sense of humor, though.
That's true.
Oh.
That's true. They wanted us to, they wanted to adjust her medication. So they asked us to take her to this psychiatrist, which they know from the facility. So I did, and I wasn't sure that this doctor was going to want me in the room, but yes, he did. And, you know, so he gave her the obviously the correct medication because it's all worked. But he also said to me that just in that short time that we were in there, he could see Mom really doing a guilt trip on me. And, you know, but still it's not easy to deal with, you know, no matter what he says. I know she's doing a guilt trip on me, but and it's hard for me not to hook into that.
And yeah. we understand it because going way back to 2001, 2000, when we, she, John had died in 96, and so she was, because he was in a wheelchair, he was in a mobile home park, it's more convenient, he'd sold his house. Well, we moved her in, and we knew something was wrong. The day we moved her out of that park, when she had this crying jag with everybody in there, like she was, and it reflects back in her childhood. She was a child of the Depression. But she moved in, and we could hear her in the house here. We gave her, she had her own room. I went and got a separate phone line, everything she had, and she would call her friends. I'm stuck in this place, all in this one room, all by myself. She had the whole house, you know, and she, you know, we would take her everywhere, do everything. She got involved. She loved gardening here. But, you know, so there are things that you have to deal with.
And it's
and
not easy.
It's not easy. I love her. I still go in whenever I see her. I do put my arm around her, and we dance in a circle. And that makes her smile. So.
So caregiving is not for the thin-skinned, huh?
No,
gosh,
it's,
no.
No, it's not.
I mean, one thing that was a very good trick for me, my mother was a narcissist and very, very difficult to take care of. And she was always right, of course. But
right.
my sister-in-law said, treat her like she's a crazy person. Just let her say whatever she wants to say. Let her go on and don't take the bait.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that was so liberating because I, you know, you could never argue with her and make sense of what she was saying.
No.
But
right.
she wasn't
guilty?
About to start. But it was this constant guilt trip.
You didn't feel guilty? Afterwards?
No.
Because okay.
I don't think she realized what I was doing.
Okay.
I just
you
I
have to come
her.
To grips in your mind that you have permission that you're allowed
yes.
to treat her, you know, whatever way will allow you to survive. Because it's either you or
her.
One of you is going to die.
Correct.
And it can't be you.
I was very kind. It's not as though this is, you know, the least bit punitive. My tone was gentler than it would have been if I had taken the bait and started to argue with her. So things
right.
became calmer. And for me, it was really a godsend.
So you removed conflict from the equation, Adrian, right?
Yes. Which, you know, like...
And nobody likes conflict.
No.
No one.
Well, except for
even
my mother.
Even the ones
who
are good at
conflict.
It, they don't like it.
Yeah. Right. I mean, if she always has to be right, then I let her always be right. It just makes life a lot easier.
I do have to add one little thing. Whatever facility they are at, this is a hard thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not accusing anybody. I'm just saying, I'm stating the facts that happened and the way we look at it. If she has anything of value, anything, he, she, whatever,
mm-hmm.
remove it, do whatever you want. So that's, but everything, that she had, even minor things,
were taken.
They were all taken. And
you mean
the only
stolen?
That,
yes, stolen.
Okay,
yes, that's what he means.
That's a bread that us Swedish people eat stolen. But,
well, it's
yes,
a very
okay.
common thing. And if you're not ready to be accused of being a thief, it's going to take you by surprise. I mean, my wife and her mother did not speak for 3 years because she accused her of stealing photographs, and she just wouldn't give up on it. I said, listen, this is going to affect the relationship. You have to let this go. And she just wouldn't let it go. So they didn't talk for 3 years. And then finally, her dementia, which we didn't know she had dementia at the time, because her sister said, oh, she's always been like that, even from as a child, you know, that kind of.
Right.
But apparently, you know, she did have dementia and it started getting worse and worse. So now we've restored the relationship because, you know, we can't hold her responsible for that.
Well,
right.
And in this case, you know, these were employees of all these facilities. So, you know, go find a Dollar General store and some replacement that, you know, is not, because it was just, we were so disgusted that people would come in and betray somebody's trust and their.
Yes. So they really they can take advantage, and you need to have your eyes wide open.
Right. And
absolutely.
Unless you're going to live there,
right.
you're not going to stop it. So just remove the temptation.
See, I misunderstood. You're saying things were actually stolen. I was saying.
Yes.
Things,
she had jewelry.
And maybe you had this also, things were not stolen, and she's accusing people of stealing it, right? So both things are probably going on.
You're right.
Yes.
As Adrian was saying, on hers was a family thing, and but ours was a situation where so many of these employees are
right.
minimum wage, and they're not vetted, in my opinion, but that's...
Right.
You know, again, that's for another place, another time. We've learned now, just don't present
the temptation.
The temptation. It's
right.
Just, you know.
Yeah, that's good.
But
And how was she 15 years ago when you first took her into the home? I mean, did she have dementia
she was,
at the time? Or was it something else?
No, I don't think so.
Was she driving?
Yes, she drove up until a couple of years ago. And listen to the reason why she had to surrender her license. It was because she didn't want to take the test. She got so nervous the 4 years before that she just refused to take the test. And I said, Mom, if you don't take the test, we have to surrender your driver's license. That's what the state of California says. And she said, I'm not going to take that test. And I said, okay.
She was capable. I mean, I love it. When she was, this would be right around 90, she would drive older people to church.
Right.
She has a red Jeep Cherokee. It was a 1995 red Jeep Cherokee wagon, and she would drive older people to church.
And she was all gray. So.
Oh, yeah, so we called her the gray ghost. So that take off in her,
so was
gray
she driving?
Bouncing.
Was she driving? I'm sorry again for interrupting. Was she driving longer than she should have? I mean, is this like the moving out thing?
No.
She knew her limitations, so she like.
And you had no problem driving with her. You felt safe in the car if she was driving.
Yeah.
Or you wouldn't go that far.
I drove anyway, but. Mm-hmm. If that was the situation, but she would take the car out to my brother-in-law's, but she always took surface streets.
Yeah, she didn't go the freeway.
So she
right
on the freeway.
Street. Yes.
And but she understood her limitations and she operated within them. Normally, in the last few years, she didn't go out to my brother-in-law's because he lives out in Santa Clarita, Sand Canyon area. But even here, she would just go to the market. You know, we were the ones who went and filled up the tank and took care of the car. She would just go to the market, go to church, and maybe
and her hairdresser and get her nails
mm-hmm.
done.
Oh yes,
that
was she
was very comfortable doing that. And I did say at the end to Brad, because church was a little bit further than that, but because she took this other guy, you know, at least she had him. And I said to Brad, what if she forgets how to get home? But she never did. And so, but in the last couple of years, you know, prior
you're very lucky.
When she, yeah, I that was my fear because, like I said, for 2 years, we should have moved her in there. But, and I don't know, you know, the way that the long-term care companies are, you know, they come out, everybody in the whole wide world came out to assess mom, you know, and the very first person was right because she questioned mom for a few minutes and then she whipped out this piece of paper and said to me, sign this because your mother needs 24 hours, 7 days a week care.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first person. And it turned out to be that way, which is why she didn't do well in the larger facility because she forgot. She'd forget what time it was and what time dinner was and breakfast.
Right.
And people have to understand that assisted living generally is just for somebody who doesn't want to cook meals and doesn't want to do the laundry. And they want to live in an apartment, but they don't want to have, you know, all these others. So they have activities and things in there. So some people have their own cars and they come and go. But so there's different levels of care, different level. It is a process, and you need a checklist to go through to see out what's going to be best, what environment, and what the rest of the residents are like. So it's been a tremendous learning process. We're still actually, I think we've gotten our BA, our master, we're still working on our PhD, so we're heavily in study.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process for people, and that's actually sort of a thing that we've taken on. Again, I go back to our itty bitty little book because it is so confusing. And the other thing we said to be very, very aware, everybody is in it for the money. If anybody recommends a place, unless you're going through your church, if anybody recommends a place to you, they get paid for making that recommendation. They go back to the institution and say, we got her to come here, pay us our commission. And
the referral fee.
Mary had a situation, I forgot what it was, that she had called somebody, and then she gave us some information. Well, that person just sent out an email to everybody.
Oh, when we decided to do the board and care because the other assisted living facilities were just too big and mom was in the skilled nursing, so I was pretty safe. I felt she was safe there because they had her alarmed, and they transported her in a wheelchair because of the fractured ribs and vertebrae. So, but I called somebody, and I said, you know, where do you think I should look to find out what's better or what's the best one? And so she said, was an Alzheimer's.
It was a support group of type. We don't want to hit names, but it was a support group.
So anyway, he asked me all this information about mom, personal information and financial information, and little did I know, but he was putting this out to every board and care locally, and I didn't know that. So anyway, I wasn't too nice, but I did take care of it, and it did stop. But it was amazing how many people called me, and that's why I say we were so afraid, you know, to make another quick decision, because was it going to be the right decision or wrong decision?
Yeah.
Even in the assisted living, they moved her from the assisted living to the memory care.
They strong-armed us.
Literally strong-armed us. Broke state law. We were very vulnerable at that time. And one of the reasons they were doing that was because the memory care
was
more money. And they needed to fill up rooms.
Wow. And then you asked me, did you call the ombudsman? And the answer to that was yes. Brad was an ombudsman back in 1987 when we got married, so I knew what the ombudsman's job was.
Mm-hmm.
But I swear to you, she worked for them, not for us or not for mom. She's supposed to be mom's advocate, but she was not. And that was also a very disappointing thing because, you know, am I going to drive to Sacramento and say, okay, so now I'm here, what are you going to do? I should have been able to contact the ombudsman and have it taken care of, but it unfortunately didn't work out that way.
So you've learned and gotten adequate skills now to be her advocate?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes,
That should go in the itty-bitty book, because advocates, being the advocate for the patient.
No, I think we do want to.
Yes.
Yeah.
We want one of those literally to be an itty-bitty book that somebody could stick in their back pocket and bring with them so that they can check things. And literally, if you don't let people know going in that you're the ones paying the money, and I want to know about this and this and this, and I've got, you know, they've got the book and all that, then, you know, their attitude changes. Other than if you don't, and they just think you're somebody coming and looking for, they'll be so nice and sweet and wonderful. And they'll have some of the fresh cookies that they keep, you know, they bake a dozen cookies every 45 minutes. So
bring them out.
You could get anybody to do anything with a fresh cookie.
Right. Yes. Especially, oh, my God, if it's a snickerdoodle. Oh, my God. But they do that, and I understand it. It's salesmanship and so on. But, you know, we're talking about somebody's life when you're gone, when they're not around, and how are they going to be treated? We're not asking her to be treated like a princess, but we're asking her to be treated like a human being who is worthy of respect.
And it sounds like the facility that you found is ideal that way. Do they listen to you?
Yes, they do. They're very good about that. And, you know, because we have, like I said, you know, we've been on nutrition for a long time, and we just insist that, you know, that mom take this nutrition because it's good for her. It isn't going to cure her from anything, but it just helps her. And most places, they're lazy. And they didn't want to do it. You know, not that mom takes a lot of medication, but she does take medication. And as I said, you know, they gave her some extra to take. And but these women over there, they're very good about it. And it's the beginning, but, you know,
it's a training process to let them know on certain things it has to be taken at certain times during the day and or with food or not with food and so on. But, you know, one of the women has been there for 18 years.
Yeah, that wow. was the other reason.
I mean, versus the first place we went.
They don't
I
stay
swear
six
to God,
months.
We didn't see anybody.
Mm-hmm.
6 weeks later, they had half the turnover. It was just, we didn't.
And why was that?
Because you don't think about it, because they don't pay them well and they work them too hard. We knew
yeah.
there was one woman there. Oh gosh, we wanted to treat her and stuff, and they just, oh, she says, I can't take it because of this and that. But, you know, she was telling how they work them like a dog.
She called it slave labor and slave prices. That's what the
was very sweet.
Yeah,
she was a wonderful woman.
They're notorious for that, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, let me
but
ask you about...
Yeah, now, if they've been there for 18 years, you know they're taking
yeah,
good care
yeah.
of them. The owners.
Let me interrupt. Can,
please.
Let's talk about holiday visits. Have you in the past, and do you still... bring her home for, you know, the overnight or a day
yeah.
or a Christmas dinner or a Thanksgiving dinner? What's your philosophy on that?
Well,
the
first Christmas was obviously last year. We had just put her in, and so we didn't bring her home. And I don't know what we're going to do for Thanksgiving and Christmas this year because we're very apprehensive to bring her home because
mm-hmm.
I just don't know how she's going to react. And I still think that, you know, if we had, you know, a sprawling house, a ranch house or something, where
mm-hmm.
she'd be on the other side of the house or something, you know, we might consider a caregiver. But I think that, and we've already found out because we love to go out to dinner on Christmas Day. There aren't a lot of restaurants open on Christmas Day. That's one day that they like to give their employees off and, you know, not be open. So, you know, it's not easy. And so I don't know what we're going to do, but I'm sure I'm going to be ridden with guilt again about not doing
Well, no, you're doing the right thing. You're doing the right thing.
We're going to have a heavy holiday dinner of guilt.
Right.
You know, my mother had dementia, and
I
made the mistake of bringing her home because,
right.
you know, it's like it's Christmas or Thanksgiving. I can't remember which one it was. I think it was Thanksgiving. And, you know, the siblings, oh, you've got to bring her. You've got to bring her. So, of course, I'm the one whose house she stayed in. And she got up every single hour asking, waking us up. You know, and saying,
mm-hmm.
uh-huh.
where am I? You know, can I go home? And, you know, and I said, wow. You know, after the fourth time, I told my wife, this is never happening again.
Yeah.
And you know, she was uncomfortable there. She would wake up and she'd be anxious and, you know, she didn't know where she was and you know, wandering the hallways of our house. And it just wasn't good. And it wasn't good for her and it
yeah.
wasn't good for us.
I
so,
mean, it
just,
it
you got to get rid of
like...
the guilt, you know.
Yeah,
yeah,
I mean, it sounds like your mom, you know, who keeps saying, you know, when can I come home? To bring her home and have her think she's home and then first take her back sounds
right. She's not
sounds like
right.
she,
yeah,
you know that might get to her. Yeah,
but that's also part of her guilt thing about wanting to come home because
mm-hmm.
her friends are there. Like I say, when we leave, she instantly incorporates herself into all the activities
sure.
and so on and so forth. So it's, and we find out about that, and then, of course, we feel taken
mm-hmm.
Again that she's, you know, she's saying things are bad and we're feeling bad, and then as soon as we leave, she's back with everybody else and she forgets about us.
Right, yeah,
mm-hmm.
so, you know,
and she needs stability,
have...
too. It's not
right.
stable
exactly.
if you keep putting her in a different environment and she,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's almost like they got to start all over when she goes back. In getting her used to this
exactly.
environment.
And you
exactly.
have to go back to that. Remember, they're children, they become adults, and then they revert back to childhood. And she's in a 92-year-old body, but she's in a very young mind about
mm-hmm.
certain things. On some things, she's mom, 100%,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
And but other things, and most things, she's, doesn't have the memory for certain things or whatever. And so you just, you know, again, just take as good a care of her as you can. I promised John that in 96, 2 days before he died, and that's what we're going to do. I'm an old Swede from the Midwest. You know, if we say we're going to do it, we take care of family. But our circumstances are different. We don't have a large extended family. So it's just Mary and I, and everybody else, who, when we said we're going to do this, I'll help. Oh, I'll put in.
Sure.
Everybody, how much are you going to put in? How much in that? And then as we got right up to it.
Yes, my brother, long gone.
Her brother, who has always helped her.
My uncle. He's long gone too.
And he said, that's too much. That's too much. You take care of her at home. That's too much. And he was gone. It was like, ow.
Yeah.
You know, we did find, I don't know if I can, this is not an advertisement, but I'll mention something that came in very handy for us. We found out through one place, because there was a 100-day deductible, and it was a $100-a-day plan. That's $10,000.
Right.
You have to pay that up front.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that we had not planned for, I do admit, because you didn't think about that.
Mm-hmm.
There's an organization called Jewish Free Loan. So we found out about it and did see them, and we were able to borrow the money. The criteria, you have to have excellent credit, number one. And number two, you have to have two co-signers who have excellent credit.
Right.
They're going to get one of the three of you if you try and walk out on them. That was not a problem for us. And we had sort of scheduled that in at all the different benefits we had coming.
And a letter that describes exactly what's going to happen, which is what Brad explained to them, that we were going to get her aid and attendance, that her long-term care would kick in, and we had the wherewithal to pay back the loan, which is exactly what happened. And
they take it right now. They take it automatically. You know, it's a sizable chunk, $425 a month.
Wow.
But that got us through a very, very big
situation.
Barrier at the beginning. So that's another thing as part of the planning. Had we just put $1 a day, okay, forget heck, for a dollar you can't even get a cup of coffee anywhere these days. iced tea is. What we were someplace the other day, iced tea was $2.59, just from a bad iced tea. So you put $1 a day aside, and then by the time when you buy your long term care, when the time comes and you need it, guess what?
You either
have the $10,000 to pay it, or if you don't, you've got some money to get somebody and do whatever, or it just becomes your own money for vacation. But that was something that we had not foreseen.
We were thankful that we found them. And of course, first thing everybody says, well, you have to be Jewish. It's like, we just heard Brad say he was Swedish, and the answer is no, you don't have to be Jewish. They have donors that donate money to the organization, and it has a specific place for it to go, which this was.
This met one of those very specific instances. But it was we had not known about it. We did discover that along the process. It was very helpful. And if it had only been something shorter term, that would have been fine. But it worked out very well, and we're very grateful. We're paying it on time. We're doing in great shape, and so on and so forth. So it's a there is a process. And at the end of – I am – because of this call – Dave and Adrian, we are going to become much, much, much more focused on writing the itty-bitty little book.
Oh, good, good, good. I can't believe how fast time has gone. We are out of time. We've got about 60 seconds for you to just tell us how we can get a hold of you, Adrian and Brad Mary, if they want to buy your itty-bitty book when it comes out. Contact info.
Well, I'll go first. It's Adrian, A-D-R-I-E, NNE at thecaregiverspace.org. We've got lots of good info.
Yeah, I highly recommend that. Very, very good site. And Brad and Mary, how can someone get a hold of you guys?
The easy way to get a hold of us is our email is just Brad and Mary, B-R-A-D-N-M-A-R-Y,
Brad letter
and Mary,
N,
at
Brad and Mary.
At letter N, at Gmail, or
.com.
They can call our .com, gmail.com, I'm sorry. Or they can call our 800 number. It's 800-272-3237.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and thank you, Adrian. Sorry, time just got away from us here. But to everybody, we're here every Tuesday at noon Pacific time, and so we'll see you next week. Thanks.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific time, and anytime afterwards on podcast, to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.